Today is June 23rd, 2014. This is Gray Edenfield on behalf of the Amelia Island Museum of History, interviewing Frank Burbank as part of the Heritage Keepers Project. Frank, could you tell us what you know about the Burbanks coming over to Fernandina from Cumberland Island?
Okay, well, you really have to start before that.
Mm-hmm.
The Burbanks were in Fernandina before they went to Cumberland Island.
Oh, cool.
My great-grandfather, great-great-grandfather, his name was Mason Burbank, and he was a carpenter here in town. In fact, he built a lot of these homes here. He actually built the Fairbanks House, a lot of homes that were designed in that Victorian era. He was the head carpenter here. I'm told that in several renovations they were doing on some homes, they actually found his carpenter certificate from way back in the 1800s. And members of my family donated it to the museum. So somewhere in your archives here, you should have one of his permits from the city of Fernandina.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I'll check into
where
that.
Where he had to fill out certain paperwork and post it before he could build a house or do any modifications. He was very active in rebuilding the Episcopal Church after the fire in the late 1800s that they had there. In fact, the altar that is there now, he actually built it. So. He was a carpenter, and that's what he did. He built a lot of the homes, a lot of the different structures around Fernandina back in the Golden Age when the homes were being built and everything, late 1800s. That would, again, be my great-great-grandfather. Now, the family was here during the yellow fever epidemic that you've heard about, okay? And unfortunately, they lost a child during that epidemic. And I have an ancestor. She's buried up in Boscobello Cemetery. Right after that, I'm not sure exactly when, the Burbanks purchased the land over on Cumberland Island. And they had moved over there. But before they did that, my great-grandfather, his name was George Burbank, he actually went to school here in Fernandina at the old brick schoolhouse down on Center Street. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Absolutely.
You probably are. Okay. At one time, that was the school. And so my great-grandfather, George Burbank, actually went to school there. The family then moved over to Cumberland Island. Again, this was after the yellow fever epidemic in the late 1800s, and they bought land up on the northern end at High Point. Now, in those days, Cumberland Island was in a way very similar to what it is now, very remote, but it still had close ties to Fernandina. Even though it's technically in the state of Georgia, when you're on Cumberland Island, if you needed to go to town to get supplies, you had to come to Fernandina, or you had to catch a steamboat going back north to Brunswick, Georgia. So you had two choices to get to town. So there was a close relationship at all times between the city of Fernandina and the people that lived and worked on Cumberland Island. Now, when the family moved to Cumberland Island, they basically were working for the Carnegie family. They were the ones that had Cumberland Island for the most part. If you're familiar with that story, they were descendants of Thomas Carnegie, who was a brother of Andrew Carnegie. And everybody knows Andrew Carnegie from the steel mill days in the 1800s. Their descendants, you probably know Mittie Ferguson here in town that runs Grayfield Inn.
Lucy did this exact same thing.
Okay, he can tell you more about his additional family than I can. But anyhow, the Burbanks were working for those people. So as a side note, a very interesting thing that I like to tell people if they want a very interesting afternoon, visit the Cumberland Island seashore. And in that, they talk about how life was on Cumberland Island. They talk about the fact that when the Carnegie family came down, they had a huge entourage of people that came with them. And a lot of them, like my family, lived here and stayed here year-round. You had to have people that knew how to shod horses, because that was horse and buggy days. You had to have blacksmiths. You had to have carpenters to take care of the houses and things like that. So there was a lot of people involved that worked for them. And again, my family just happened to be one of the working groups that worked for the family. Like many people that worked for the family in those days, and many people that lived in town here in Fernandina, they had other jobs. And the other job would be fishing, living off the water and the land. So there were shrimp to be had. There were fish. We had an abundant resources here. And my family made a lot of their livelihood living off of catching fish and everything, trapping and so forth here in this area, both Cumberland Island and around the waters here in front of Dam.
Is it true that someone in your family owned an inn on Cumberland Island?
Yes, that was Mason Burbank.
That's Mason, okay.
When he went to Cumberland Island, he bought a piece of land, and there was a kind of like a hotel up there. Actually, they called it a trading post because there were an entourage of people living up there. And this gave them access to other goods on a fairly daily basis because the steamboat ran from Brunswick to Cumberland to Fernandina and back. And Grandpa Mason would buy things and put them in his little store. And also had a hotel. He had people come down to visit. And he was apparently some kind of an entrepreneur that doing a few things there to make money. Now, his son George was also helping him at that time. George also worked with the Carnegie family. He did various jobs. One of the jobs he did, he was one of the pilots on one of the steamboats that ran between Brunswick, Jekyll Island, Cumberland Island, and Fernandina. But yes, they did have a home up there. They did have a trading post as such and a hotel. He did have people come down and stay there and you know, visit them and things like that.
Oh, great. So that brings us to William Hunter the First.
Right.
George's son.
Exactly. William Hunter Burbank is my grandfather, and George would be his father. And he was born up there on Cumberland Island in 1893. So by 1893, the Burbanks had formally moved up to Cumberland Island at that time. And George, again, lived... He was not born on Cumberland Island. He was born down here and went to school here. But my grandfather was born on Cumberland Island, okay? And my grandfather grew up there. And, of course, he would help his dad and his granddad in the family business and everything, as well as fishing. They were commercial fishermen. Again, you had an abundance of resources. They could catch fish, catch shrimp, catch oysters, and sell them. That's how those people made their money in those days. So he lived on the water, basically just made his living, catching fish and so forth and everything. He did go to Berry School up in Rome, Georgia, to study the mechanics trade. And he spent some time up there, just a few years, and his actual trade was a mechanic. And I'm told by people he's a pretty good mechanic. Mm-hmm. This is back in the days of very simple diesel engines. Gas engines were just getting started, you know, just in the early days of the internal combustion engine, you might say. But he did overhaul people's engines and stuff like that, both in Brunswick and Fernandina. Now, you mentioned the bluefish run when everybody came here. Well, my granddad was fishing in these waters, and he officially came here during the bluefish run. That is true. But again, the Burbank family had been in Fernandina many years before that. My grandfather was very familiar with Fernandina even before that. But when the bluefish were running, they had to unload them here in Fernandina. So they picked up and moved over here officially into town, you might say. Again, Cumberland Island, that was out in the country. You moved to town, you moved to Fernandina.
Yeah.
So they moved to town. When the bluefish played out, that's when the shrimping industry started. And you had a question there, I believe. You wanted some information on the very, very early days of the shrimp industry.
Yes.
All right, and my family's involved. Okay. Shrimp were very plentiful. As you know, Billy Corkum came down from Massachusetts. He was a blue fisherman. And they used a primitive type of net, a trawl, to try to catch bluefish. Before that, for thousands of years, people had been trying to catch shrimp in these waters. They did it with cast nets. The Indians did it with traps, fish traps. They did it with seines. And a seine is a straight piece of webbing. They used to drag it between two boats and so forth. Set it out in the river or whatever and take a boat and bring it back to shore. So people have been trying to catch shrimp that way for years and years. Billy Corkum tried the trawl. My grandfather at that time was a shrimper, and the story goes that he decided to develop his own net. And my cousin Billy can tell you more about that, the peculiarities or you know, the different things in making that net and everything. But he developed a net basically so he could catch more shrimp because that was his living. He was a boat captain. And my granddad was very successful, and other people started wanting his nets. So he would start to build nets for the other boat captains in Fernandina, the other fishermen. Well, the next thing you know, he had more business than what he could handle building nets down here on the dock. I'm talking right here on Center Street. Same dock right here. A little bit different now, but Brett's restaurant was not there then.
Right.
And, you know, those were the docks. So my granddad was building shrimp nets then. He had a shrimp boat. He had bought his own shrimp boat. And he actually had his brother-in-law, a gentleman named Bluff Peterson, which I will mention his name later on. Peterson were a very predominant family in the early days of the shrimp industry here in Fernandina and down in St. Augustine and other places. Anyhow, he had his brother-in-law run the boat, and my granddad stayed on shore making nets because his nets were in such demand. So that kind of brings you up through the early part of the 1900s and the shrimping industry and what was going on at that point.
I was wondering, could you tell me about Effie, your grandmother?
Yeah, sure. My grandmother, Effie, she was from North Carolina, and they had moved down here in the early 1900s. And she had met my grandfather at that time, of course, here in Fernandina, and they lived up here on Center Street. And her family, they were all fishermen as well. Her grandfather and her father was a fisherman. All her brothers were fishermen. I mentioned the one brother, Bluff Peterson, that ran my dad's boat. Another gentleman you've probably heard of, Sloan Peterson. He was a pioneer here in Fernandina in the shrimp industry. That was another brother. They were all fishermen. So the Burbanks were fishermen, and the Peterson side of my family, my grandmother's family, were all fishermen, okay? And basically, that's how my grandmother and grandfather met. My granddad was friends with the Peterson boys.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
All right.
And then they, your father, Frank, is their second son?
He's their second son. That's
right.
Correct. Grandma and Grandpa Burbank, this is Bill and Effie. They had six children all together. And my Uncle Billy was the oldest boy. And that's his son that you've talked to. My dad was the youngest son. And his name is Frank, of course. I'm Frank Jr. Okay. Now, all the Burbanks grew up in the net business. All right. Again, our grandfather, we called him Pop. He was making nets the whole time. In fact, he had a fish market down on Center Street, right at the foot of Center Street on the dock. But even though he had the fish market, he was still making nets through this whole time period. Another footnote here, by the way, way back in those early days, do you remember the building where the 1878 steakhouse was built? That was my grandfather's first net shop. When he decided to get a building because he needed to expand and get off the waterfront, out of the, get a place to store the nets and stuff out of the weather and so forth. Where that building is, that was his first net shop. That was even before he got the fish market. But anyhow, later in the early 1900s, he got into the fish market business and unloaded boats and everything. But he's still building nets all along the whole time.
And the boys are helping him.
Yes. Yes, very much so.
And that's how your dad got into net making. Billy said he was renowned for how quick he was. That it was a big deal for him when he got as fast as your dad was.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, I believe he's right there. My dad was real fast with a needle. He's very, very good, very talented net man. Uncle Billy, his brother, was a very talented net man, and they all learned the trade from their father, my grandfather, Bill Burbank. Okay, so. My grandfather, he's building nets. He has the fish market, and his sons are brought up in the shrimping industry. Okay. Now, in the early part of the of this time period, my grandfather started to work with the Hardy family, and you're familiar with the Hardy family. Their grandfather, a gentleman named Ira Hardy, had Standard Marine Supply, Standard Hardware, they called it in those days. He sold hardware and supplies to the shrimpers. And on a handshake agreement between Mr. Ira and my grandfather, Mr. Hardy agreed to buy the netting and material, and my grandfather would make the nets. So the Burbank family's relationship started at that point with the Hardy family, and that went on for three generations. My grandfather, both of his sons, my father, and my Uncle Billy, and even my cousin Billy later years, right up until a few years ago, the relationship with the Hardys and the Burbanks goes back for three generations.
So a little bit more about that. Billy told me that your dad went to Tampa at one point, and he was still working for the Hardys. Could you tell me about that a little bit?
Sure. Well, the reason why we went to Tampa, it's all directly tied in with the history of the shrimping industry as a whole. So I'll give you a broad picture if I can. Fernandina, of course, is the birthplace of the shrimping industry. We talked a little bit about the very early days of developing the shrimp trawl and everything. Well, the shrimpers, as you probably know, started spreading out in the early 1900s. They went as far south as St. Augustine. That was really a long ways away then. They went as far north as Thunderbolt, Georgia. Long ways away. Anyhow, they kept working up the coast in the Carolinas and further down. A lot of the old families that were in Fernandina, even some of the families that came directly from the old country, from Italy and Sicily that you asked me about, a lot of them moved down to St. Augustine to move their base of operations down there. Again, it was closer to run a boat into St. Augustine and unload it than it was to run the boat all the way back here to Fernandina. So it just makes practical sense, okay? The industry is going pretty good on the East Coast. And I say the East Coast from the Carolinas right on down. And in the fishing industry, you'll find there's ups and downs in the years. Some years are good, some years are not so good. And there was a time period, we're talking in the 40s and middle, late 40s, I guess, after World War II, the shrimping got kind of slow here on the East Coast. In fact, a lot of people were having a lot of trouble with just catching up to make a living. You know, it was a tough way to make a living, okay? Whether you had a shrimp boat and worked on it, or whether you were a net man trying to make nets and everything, it was tough. And a lot of people didn't make it. A lot of families sold their boats and so forth or whatever. But then something good happened as the shrimp were kind of playing out and so forth on the East Coast. Two things happened within a matter of just a few years. The shrimping grounds off Key West, Florida were discovered. And my uncle, Bluff Peterson, I mentioned, he was the main person that found those shrimping grounds, okay? So he was a pioneer for that area. This would be back in the, late 1940s, right after World War II. At the same time, they discovered shrimp in the Campeche fishing grounds off Mexico, Campeche Bay. It was the most productive shrimping grounds that anybody has ever discovered at that time. Okay? So what happened is a lot of the boats and a lot of the families from the East Coast picked up and moved over to the Gulf of Mexico. When I was coming up in Tampa, I'm talking about the late 1950s and early 1960s, for example, there were probably 200 shrimp boats in that one harbor alone. Fort Myers had a huge fleet. Key West had a huge fleet. And guess what? Most of those people were from right over here on the East Coast. Specifically Fernandina, St. Augustine, St. Mary's, Georgia, and so forth, Mayport, Florida, and so forth. In fact, I've told people, if you somehow could magically pick Fernandina up and put it down on the shrimp docks in Tampa, that's what you had, because not only did you have the big fleet owners with the names the families were very familiar with, but the people that ran the boats for them were all from over here on the East Coast, specifically Fernandina. So the best way I can describe it is when they found Campeche and really opened up those fishing grounds, the gold rush was on. It was just like the California gold rush that you read about in the history books, where people from all over the world, all over the country, were going to California to get rich in gold. Same thing was happening when they discovered the Campeche shrimping grounds. People from all over were moving over to the Gulf to fish Campeche, okay? Now, if I may digress for a minute, before this area, a lot of people from Fernandina had moved over into Louisiana and Texas and had pioneered those fishing grounds. And a lot of the the boat owners and a lot of the people here went to work for those people, and they caught a tremendous amount of shrimp over in Texas and Louisiana. With the coming of Campeche, the Texas boats were going down to Campeche. There were that many shrimp down there to be caught. So again, it was a boom. And then again, this was in the, I want to say late 50s. It was really going good, early 60s and so forth. You had, again, not only Tampa, but you had Fort Myers, Key West, Brownsville, Texas was a big port. And some of the very people that fished out of Brownsville, Texas, trace their roots right back here to Fernandina. Many of them were members of the Hardy family.
Mm-hmm.
So in my travels, I have run into people all along the Gulf Coast over there from Brownsville, Texas, back through the Louisiana coast, Mississippi, Alabama, that I found people that have said, hey, my grandfather was from Fernandina and came over there with the shrimping industry. So we really are the birthplace of the shrimping industry. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Things spread. Now, getting back to my immediate family, how we moved to Tampa, my father was a net man for Standard Marine, the Hardy family, here in Fernandina, just like Billy's dad was. And he's told you a story about his family.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we moved to Tampa because there were so many boats down there and there was so much network to be done. So my father ran the net shop for Standard Marine Supply down in Tampa. Again, working for the Hardy family. We were contractors for them. And he was there many, many years with the Hardy family, making all the nets and so forth. Now, while we were in Tampa, things are always expanding. Campeche's going strong. Boats are sometimes going to Texas and Louisiana in the summertime, coming back to Key West in the winter to shrimp. Then they started going to Central and South America. Well, it's the same thing. Many of the people that had their boats going to Central and South America are good old Fernandina people. The same families that left Fernandina a decade ago and went to Campeche to fish, went to Campeche and the Gulf of Mexico to fish, they're now the people that are pioneering Central America and the South American fishing grounds. You've probably heard of the names like Versaggi, mm-hmm. Solomon, and so forth. They were truly the pioneers that went down there. You also have to remember that the people running their boats, names that you've never heard, many names that will never go down in any history book or anything, were guys from right here in Fernandina that were on these boats and were actually out there dragging for shrimp and looking for shrimp.
So they're following the shrimp around.
They're following the shrimp. Exactly. Exactly. Basically, that's kind of a quick history of the shrimping industry. But it started here in Fernandina, expanded up and down our coast a little bit, went over to Texas and Louisiana, and then it really boomed when it went to Key West and Campeche, Mexico. And then after that, another boom happened in South America and Central America.
When would you say, you hear people talk about the decline of the shrimping industry.
Mm-hmm.
Might be hard to give an exact date, but broadly, when would you say that happened?
Well, the shrimping industry was pretty good right up into the early 70s, I would say. And then in the middle to late 70s, it really, really got to be real tough. And this is for everybody,
mm-hmm.
okay? Whether you're on the East Coast of Fernandina, whether you shrimp out of Morgan City, Louisiana, Key West, Florida, Tampa, Florida, it doesn't matter. There were a lot of boats out there dragging for shrimp. And what happened, they started to import a lot of shrimp from overseas, pond-raised shrimp. And that really was real, real bad for the local American shrimpers. And also the price of fuel started to get real high. You're probably too young to remember in the 70s, but I can remember when the fuel prices really jumped up. There was a time when we used to pay 12 cents a gallon for fuel. And you don't pay 12 cents a gallon now. And not only is the price of fuel high, but again, you have foreign imports. You go to Publix, you see the shrimp
farm
from Thailand,
shrimp.
Taiwan, and all that,
mm-hmm.
you know. It not only affects the people that actually own the shrimp boats, the people that work on the shrimp boats, but other people, other industries that serve the shrimp boats. For example, Standard Marine Supply. I was working for Standard Marine Supply here up until about 12 years ago, and they went out of business because the shrimpers couldn't afford to buy supplies. So this, not only are the shrimp boats and the shrimpers themselves affected, but it affects other people, other industries that are tied in with the shrimp industry to serve it. For example, the hardware and the netting industry and so forth. So the 70s really started the decline of it. I want to say middle to late 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been getting tough ever since, you know. As you know, Billy, he's expanded his business into the net business for baseball, mm-hmm. sports net. That's a very smart move, you know, because there are just not that many nets out here. And again, soaring fuel cost and imported shrimp. All these shrimp coming in from overseas, it's really, really hurt the shrimp industry here in the United States of America.
Could you tell us a little bit more about you, when you were born and where, and what brought you back here to Fernandina?
Okay. Yes, I was born from 1951, lived the first part of my life here in Fernandina. Again, my dad was a net man here, working in family net business here in Fernandina. And we moved to Tampa in the late 50s. I'm going to say I was like first grade, something like that. And the reason why we moved to Tampa, again, my father was a net man for Standard Marine down there. They opened up that facility because we had such a big fleet of shrimp boats in Tampa at that mm-hmm. time. And the boats were fishing in Campeche, Mexico. So we moved down there, and I worked with my father in the net shop. Grew up sewing nets, just like Billy grew up, and his brothers grew up with their dad up here in Fernandina. I grew up in my dad's net shop. And my dad taught me how to sew and learned the trade from him and everything. So the whole time I was coming up, I worked for him. My father also had shrimp boats. And we went to Texas every summer and shrimped over there and then came back to Florida in the wintertime. So we were always around the shrimp boats.
Mm-hmm. So what did you do after that?
Well, after I got out of high school, I went to high school in Tampa. I went off to college. I went to Texas A&M University over in Texas. Again, I got there through the family shrimp boats being over there. My dad's shrimp boats. I worked with my dad on the boats over there. And so I decided to stay over there and go to college. Again, in this time period, the shrimping industry was really coming upon hard times. It was obviously that's not really the best
thing to get into for a young man.
Best thing to get into. It wasn't like it was in the old days, you know. After college, I sailed in the Merchant Marine for quite a bit. I was very fortunate to be able to travel around the world and so forth. Worked on seismograph boats. We were doing research. Worked on oil field supply boats and so forth. And then I came ashore and got in the menhaden fishing industry, commonly called the pogie boats. And you're familiar, I'm mm-hmm. sure, a little bit about the pogie plant we used to have here. I worked for a company out of Houston, Texas then. Worked in Louisiana, Mississippi, that area. At that time, the company, by the way, was Zapata Corporation, started by the first George Bush. But at that time, we were the largest fishing company in the free world. Menhaden fishing is a very big mm-hmm. business, very big. And we had three or four factories in Louisiana, also some up the East Coast in Virginia, and I was one of their port captains.
Oh, wow.
So basically, I chased the pogie boats around, you know. They had to go to dry dock. I had to go to the shipyard as a company representative, you know, to get the work done on the repairs and so forth. And it was a very good living. It was very good to me, no question about it. But that industry has fallen on hard times, and the reason why is foreign imports. Most of the fish that are caught, the pogie fish, are used as animal food and animal byproducts and so forth. And they've got fish meal, but they can import fish meal from South America cheaper than these guys can catch it and manufacture it and make it here in the United States. So again, the foreign imports have really hurt that industry. It was a booming industry when I was in it as a young man, but no more. I had a chance to come back to Standard Marine Supply in Fernandina. Again, my family goes way back to Standard Marines. I was no stranger to them. They were no stranger to me. So I had a chance to move back home to Fernandina in 1994. So I came back. My cousin Billy's running the net shop here for Standard Marine Supply, and I went to work in the office. So I worked for the Hardy family as assistant manager in the office.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Cool. Any other family stories? I've heard Billy talk about y'all running the scenes on the from the beach and pushing them all back onto the beach and the whole family helping out?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Any stories like that?
Right, sure. Well, some of those stories, basically the same ones Billy has told you. The family, again, even while my granddad, my dad, and all those guys are building nets, they're still fishing because you're trying to do what you can to make a living, let's mm-hmm. face it. And they had beach seines, and a beach seine against a strong, long piece of webbing and so forth. And they would be over here on Amelia Island on the beach, setting the seine into the surf certain times a year, usually in the summer, catching fish, catching whiting, mullet, everything they could, pompano mm-hmm. and so forth, and selling the fish. So when the net business was kind of slow, they would be out there catching fish, okay? And when Billy and I were real little fellows running around the beach there, we would be following our dads and grandfathers out there, and they would be out there setting those seines, catching fish all up and down the coast in the Amelia Isle and everything. Now, that was tough work because I have seen my father and Uncle Billy, they set that boat in the surf. The seine was about a 1,500-foot seine. That's 1,500 is in 1,500 feet, okay? Nothing but net. And they would launch that boat through the surf, out through the breakers, rowing. And they would row that boat out past the breakers around a school of fish to make a set, then turn the boat, row it up the beach, then move it back in. Then when they got out of the boat, they put the boat on the beach, drop the anchor on the sand and everything, waves are breaking and all of that. And then the men would get the grab a hold of the net, and they pulled it by hand. You'd have men on this end, men on this end. My father, I can see it now. Many times I've watched him row that boat and pull that net in. It was all done by hand. And they'd have a big, hopefully a big, large school of fish because that was their living, you know. And my granddad, he'd be running the show out there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see him now standing out there in the surf with his hip boots and grabbing the cork line and all that and everything. So those were a lot of fun days that Billy and I had running around as kids up and down the beach and everything, you know. But that's what our fathers did. And my dad worked for his dad for all those years. Now, once we moved to Tampa, my dad did not get to come back as often and you know, do the beach fishing and everything because that took his time, you know, staying down in Tampa.
Is there anything special you remember about Fernandina as a kid, things that have changed that maybe not be around today?
Well, yes, a lot of things have changed. The town itself has changed. It doesn't look anything like it did in those days. I mentioned after I got out of college, I sailed in the Merchant Marine for a while, worked in the oil field, and I was gone from Fernandina for quite a few years, and I came back after they revamped downtown, and I was completely lost. I didn't know what happened. So downtown looks altogether different. In those days, you had a lot of small businesses in town, five and dime stores and so forth. And now the downtown is catering more towards the tourist, as you know. You go downtown, you've got shops selling towards the tourist. I currently work at Robinson Jewelry, as you know. And by the way, just to back up, I went to work at Robinson Jewelry about 11, 12 years ago because Standard Marine had closed down, again, due to the shrimp business being so poor. And I was lucky to be able to find employment with Robinson Jewelry and stay here in Fernandina. But right now, they're the oldest retail business on Center Street. When I was coming up as a kid, you had Parton's Menswear been in business since 1875 or whatever, and a lot of old businesses, hardware stores and so forth. The Hardy family owned a hardware store, which is now where the Fudge Shop is. They're on Center and Third. That was where everybody went to get your hardware and everything, you know. Standard Marine, they had that. They called that Hardy Brothers Hardware Store. So there's a lot of changes in downtown. And the other thing that I noticed when I got back, when you look down the beach now, you see high-rise condominiums.
Yeah.
You did not see that in those days, what I call the good old days, when Billy and I were kids running around and our grandfather and our father were fishing on the beach. You could ride down the beach all day long and not see another person. And we would go down there fishing with my grandfather and my dad. I know a lot of the fishermen had different names from different places. There was a big, tall sand dune down there that dropped off into a straight bluff, like a cliff. And they called that Burbank's Bluff after my dad. because the way there was a slough coming up by the shore there, that was one of his favorite places to make a set with the seine, and they could catch a lot of fish here. Kind of like a good place. You kind of always count on fish being in there, you know, because my granddad and my dad, they really knew this beach very well, you know. Again, in those days, now this is before we moved to Tampa, my family moved to Tampa, I'm talking 1950s, late 1950s, early 60s, there was nothing on Fernandina Beach. You could just drive all day and fish and whatever, you know. And those men knew the water, they knew the beach very well, where to go to fish, where not to go, and so forth. But times have changed.
Sure.
You can't drive on a lot of the beaches. There's condominiums, there's hotels, there's seawalls where there used to be sand dunes. This big sand dune I'm talking about, Burbank's Bluff, that's been mowed down. I believe the Omni Hotel is sitting on top of it now. So things have drastically changed from what I remember.
Sure. Well, any other thoughts or anything you want to add?
No, I would just say that Fernandina does have a very unique history. It's still a very nice town, and, things have changed, but a lot of things have changed for the better.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a very good town with good people. And I wrote down some of the names of some of the people mm-hmm. that you may want
yes,
to
I have that.
In your records, because a lot of the people have read about the families that had boats that were pioneers in the shrimping industry, and they really were. I mean, there's no question about it. The Solomons, the Persaggis, the Tringallis, the Ferguson family. They started here in Fernandina, and they went to other places, and I've known their descendants and now their grandkids and kids for years and years over in the Gulf. Again, I've run into them all over mm-hmm. there. So Fernandina really is... played a very important role in the beginning of the modern shrimp industry as we know it today.
Great. Thanks so much for talking to me today, and this concludes our interview with the Heritage Keepers Project. Thanks.